You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the Cotton Club crew. My name is Michael Macon. I'm joined by my good friend Joe. We're talking Texas Tech baseball. We just finished a recording on the Texas Tech basketball. We just finished a recording on the baseball side of things. Feel free to give that a listen. We talked about the Texas series, the lessons learned, how the program can improve, and a lot more. This episode is going to be talking about basketball. The Big 12 tournament is now up. Texas Tech will play Thursday. They secured the double bye with that big win over Baylor. Which both was huge because the double bye means that you're not playing as much basketball right before the NCAA tournament, which I always love. If you're going to make a run, make it a short one. And it also was a big resume boost as Tech tries to work their way up closer to a 6, maybe a 5 seed. I don't know if it's possible, but that's the hope. But we're going to talk about not just the Big 12 tournament. We're going to forecast a little bit the seeding in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, that could change depending what happens in Kansas City. And we're going to talk about the regular season overall. Now that we've got the complete picture, what did we see? What did we like? What did we not like? Joe, let's start there. Let's start big picture first and then start narrowing our focus to the tournaments coming up. This was not an easy year for the Red Raiders. Besides the midseason slump, which we're all aware of, a lot of injuries, which we're all aware of, it just wasn't easy. There was noise off the field. There was all kinds of nonsense going on with drama with some of the transfers. I mentioned the slumps, the injuries. This was a year full of adversity. Texas Tech would finish with 20 plus wins in the year. Grant McCaslin, I think the stat is he has not had a team he's coached finish under 20 wins in his first season. So he continues to do great wonders with new programs. Let's start with the mental toughness of this team. What impressed you the most about overcoming the adversity they battled? Who do you think was really the catalyst for a lot of what allowed the team to navigate some troubled waters?
I'm just going to give all the credit to the coaching staff, you know, able to navigate the illnesses and the Devin Cambridge injury and the Warren Washington injury, you know, just navigating some of these tougher waters and, you know, handling some of the off the court issues, you know, the situation with Pop Isaacs, the now situation with Kai Lindsey, you know, one of those things. It's just like a lot of different noise coming from a lot of different places, and just being able to keep your guys focused. And I also give that a testament to some of these older guys on the team, you know, your Joe Toussaint's, your Warren Washington's, your Chance McMillan's, these guys, and your Kerwin Walton, these guys that have been around for a while, and being able to, you know, talk to these other players and teammates, you know, about keeping your composure, staying course, and actually just building on success. Yes, we did very, very well. I, like I said, I spent a lot of time with this team through the summer and then sometime before the team actually started playing, I was high on this team to begin with. There was no doubt in my mind that if the cards fell in the right places and this team bonded and gelled together, that they would be make a legitimate NCAA tournament push. And look where we are. They made a legitimate tournament push. Up at some points in time, they were as high as, on some people's brackets, as high as a 3 seed. And then we started having some injuries, you know, other issues started happening, losing some close games that we had there. But that's neither here or there. It's just one of those deals. That's basketball. That's Big 12 basketball. You have to hold service. You have to hold your home court. You have to protect home. 15-2 on the season. You wish you could probably get that Cincinnati game back here in Lubbock. The Texas game was just abysmal, but I'm just saying there's games out there that were left that we could have won that could have projected us a little bit higher. But I think overall, if you're looking at the body of work of Coach McCaslin and his staff, this is all he does. All he does is win everywhere he goes, 20 plus wins every year, every first year at a new gig. And he put us there, his coaching staff. And then as we're starting to get healthy, you know, we could make a legitimate push in the Big 12 tournament. And we could also make a legitimate push in the NCAA tournament once we have Warren Washington back, who he'll be somewhere close to around 25 days of full rest before he actually comes back out. Potentially, I don't know if he'll be at like 80 or 90%, but, you know, any Warren Washington out there for 20 minutes plus a game, you know, that'll help this team a whole lot. And then with the emergence of EY himself, he's just making himself a bigger, bigger piece in Coach McCaslin's rotation as a true freshman. And like I said, it's just been good. This coaching staff deserves all the credit in the world for keeping these guys on the prize, focused, all the halftime adjustments Coach McCaslin and his staff makes. I mean, these guys are top notch, and it's showing with some of these basketball players and this team.
It is a true testament, and I think why Grant McCaslin was brought in, because I think you can say many things about the last several years of Tech basketball, but last year the easiest way to describe what was going on was just a complete lack of command in the locker room. You know, Mark Adams, for whatever he did or didn't do off the court, clearly did not have the respect of the team, did not have any ability to really reach them and coach them into you know, dealing with adversity. I mean, when that team slumped, they just gave up. So this could have happened this year. There was a tough stretch there where it really looked like, you know, Pop couldn't find his shot. Joe Toussaint was playing badly. You're banged up, you're hurting, you're sick, and there just nothing was going your way. I will also say part of this is a huge break that the easiest part of the schedule occurred right as that slump really needed to be busted. You got Oklahoma State and West Virginia right there. That little 1-2 was hell of a get right moment, and it really set you up to take it at Baylor. But overall, you are clearly ahead of schedule of where this program thought they were going to be this year, and that's a big props to Grant McCaslin. But I also want to give a shout out to all the guys involved on the court for just being coachable, because it a lot had to go their way in order to get this far when the plan blew up when Cambridge went down. And then it got further blown up when your new plan got shot to smithereens when Warren Washington went down. You had to be coachable. You had to find new ways to attack. You had to find new ways to try to win, try to sustain, try to get to this point where you're in position to, you know, you not only finish fourth in the Big 12, but you are comfortably in the NCAA tournament field. You're a top 25 team at the moment. You know, and that's a testament to what these guys were doing, and especially considering the dumbassery off the court that was going on. I mean, I'm not going to rehash the situation in which I don't know all the facts, but it was clear a lot of people made some dumbass decisions, and it nearly backfired in a massive way for this both the university and for the team itself. You know, to try to navigate that is not easy, right? Like, it's easy to point fingers when you start losing at what's going wrong, especially when, you know, Pop was in the middle of like a heroically awful slump. I mean, I've never seen a shooter go from having great touch on the basketball to not being able to throw it in the ocean like that. And that is a time in which a lot of, you know, locker rooms can fracture and break down considering the outside pressures on them. But they really kept it together and had the mental fortitude to turn it around, granted against lesser competition, but Baylor no slouch by any means, and they really took it to the Bears. And then sustained even more adversity in that game when Baylor climbed all the way back and took the lead it really looked like the wheels were about to come off once again in yet another Texas Tech sporting event. Instead, they battled back, rebuilt the lead, and came out with the double bye secured and the fourth place finish. And most importantly, yet another resume point. So the mental fortitude of this team was incredibly impressive to watch. It's a credit to the staff. It's a credit to the guys staying together. It's a credit to the leaders on the team, because this was not an easy season. Now, as we start narrowing the focus a little bit, let's start by talking about that finish against the Baylor Bears. You know, this was a interesting game. Tech blew the doors off of Baylor to start the game. I mean, they just really took it to them. The Bears, being very, very good and well-coached in their own right, didn't let the game get away from them completely, but Tech had full command of this game. But then the wheels came off of it. As I mentioned, Baylor would actually rally to tie and take the lead. Texas Tech would take it right back and then never look back. But let's talk about this game in particular, Joe. This is probably the best indicator of where the team is at. It was at your home floor against a highly rated opponent. What did you see in this one that speaks to what Tech can do down the line in the Big 12 tournament beyond?
Just a resiliency. I mean, being able to fight back. I mean, any team that was up like Texas Tech was in this ball game, and then for that lead to be chopped and chopped and chopped, ultimately to be given up, and then to come back and hit bucket after bucket after bucket and get the crowd right back into it, and then just pull away from that point on. It just kind of goes to show you the resiliency that this basketball team has. The whole no quit mentality. There's been very few games this year where this basketball team has let the wheels completely fall off, where it lasted the entire time, where there wasn't any fight left. Like, they just were completely gassed. And this was one of those games that did not happen. We had so much more in the tank. We put it all out there, and, you know, we weathered the storm that Baylor had ultimately chopped down in the second half, made those stops, and then go back, get a steal, hit another big three. Like, it was just poetry in motion. This basketball team, like I said, just weathered the storm as best as it could, and they didn't let the moment get too big for them. Given it was senior night, it was a sold-out arena. I mean, it was just all of the chips were starting to stack up against them as Baylor started chopping this lead down. And then for them to come back and punch them right back in the mouth was nothing but spectacular. Kerwin hitting threes, Pop hitting a three to take the lead back, and Chance hitting a three, Darian hitting another three. Like, these guys just, they were nonstop. They were relentless on the defensive side, causing so much pressure and havoc for the Baylor Bears, and then getting out in the open court and running. So this team is just, like I said, they just embody everything that Coach McCaslin and company have done, have no quit. They have zero diva kind of mentalities. They all play for each other. And it's, like I said, just watching them come back after they lost the lead to do what they did was just nothing short of remarkable.
What I like the most about this, besides, as you mentioned, just the battle in this team to get back into it when it felt like, because I mean, we all know previous Tech teams would have lost this game. Last year's team would never even been in this position. So it was extremely heartening to see that. But I think what I like the most is there were some moments of like really good, complete basketball, which you have not seen a lot. I mean, you saw it against Oklahoma State and then against Baylor, but for a lot of this season, you were kind of a one-dimensional team. You had to score a lot, and when you did not score a lot, you just couldn't seem to get over the hill and get those big wins done. So it was nice to see a team that looked at times to be playing really complete basketball. Granted, you want to play a full 40 minutes. You can't have slumps like that and expect to make it far in the tournaments. Especially the NCAA tournament, where, you know, energy and momentum determine so much of the outcomes of those games. Like, more than any sporting event, your ability to ride the wave and stay on a high matters more than anything. But at the same time, so is being able to sustain somebody's best punch, because you're going to get it every round. Even if Tech ends up in some sort of miracle scenario as high as a 4 seed, which would give them a pretty comfortable opening round, you're going to take somebody's best shot each round. Nobody is messing around in that tournament. Nobody's there for no reason. So, you know, that's great. But playing complete basketball means you're protecting the ball. You know, Tech didn't have a ton of turnovers. I think they only had 2 heading into about the 16-minute mark of this game. It's when the turnovers started that the wheels started to come off. making smart passes. I saw some sequences against Baylor, and I don't remember exactly when this was, but it was between Pop Isaacs and a couple other Red Raiders, including the Fightin' Finn, who, you know, they had this little triangle moment underneath where they're pushing on a fast break, make one extra pass, two extra pass, easy bucket with the and one. And that, I remember thinking that and watching that and being like, that's one of the better moments of the season. And there were a couple of those in this game where they just played really crisp, decisive basketball. I've talked about it all year, the importance of knowing where you're going with the ball, making the extra pass, having an outlet, knowing if I get caught in this situation, this is who I'm supposed to go to next. Because sometimes defenses rotate harder than you expect, or somebody comes to double you weren't seeing. So to see them really take advantage of that in this Baylor game was really great to see. And yeah, I mean, like the biggest lesson, the biggest takeaway is just they took it the chin there in the second half and managed to stay upright and keep battling back. But I think it speaks well to their chances in the tournament. Warren Washington's health is still a big question. What he is long-term able to give you minutes-wise is still a big question. You know, obviously they've been resting him as much as they can. The double bye will give him a little bit extra rest. Even if you have even if you do have a little bit of a run in the Big 12 tournament, you're not battling all the way back. You're getting that extra day. So, you know, we'll see what he does. But it is important that this team looked like it found a way to win without him, and to find a way to really handle him not being there. You know, live with the deficiencies of this team without a true power big, and do the best you can and find a ways to attack an opposing basketball team and sustain punches throughout the course of a basketball game. Now, let's start looking at the Big 12 tournament. The double bye is obviously Tech's biggest advantage here. But let's talk about this, Joe. When you're looking at this bracket, you know, it's never easy. Every game in the Big 12 is a bit of a nightmare, but it couldn't be much better for Tech, I don't believe. I mean, you get in the double bye, you can avoid some of the riffraff early on. How are you confident are you feeling about this team's ability to get these early, to get this first win, and then maybe take a shot at trying to get to the crown?
If they played like they played against Baylor at the start and then the way they finished, I think they could play with anybody on a neutral site. And I think Kansas, obviously, I mean, if Kansas is somehow figures a way to make it to the championship without Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCuller, then that would be in its own right massive. But I think that Tech would be able to beat them. But I do see Tech either, I mean, we see the winner of UCF BYU tomorrow or on Thursday in the morning. Each one of those teams kind of presents challenges. Whenever we played BYU earlier on in the year, they just went on a three parade. That's just what they do, is shoot threes and shoot them in bunches, and they're going to keep shooting them. But we also were bodied down low by their big men, so they may ultimately change their attack if they do see us on Thursday morning. And then Central Florida, we've played them twice this year, two different outcomes of the game, but they do have some bigger guys as well. How will we compete whenever we don't have our own big guy back? It's going to be interesting to see how Coach McCaslin plays this out. But I think that if we could get past BYU, obviously then that sets up a date with Houston on Friday. So then after that, all bets are off. But Houston's the hands-down favorite with, you know, Jamal Shedd and that defense, you know, to take the Big 12 crown like they took the regular season crown. So I think you could win the first game, but that second game's going to be tough regardless of the situation. That's with 100% Warner. Not Warren at all. It's just going to be a tough ask to do. Maybe you get them just because you get them on a neutral site and they don't play great outside of Houston, but it's a tough ask because that's the number one team in the nation for a reason.
Houston's the heavy favorite in terms of total confidence about winning the tournament. To be frank, it's pretty low just because, you know, Warren Washington's health is a question, but also just, I'm a big believer in the necessity of the Big 12 tournament being pretty minimized for a team in Tech's position. I don't think there's a lot of room to move up the seeding board. I think you win your first game, you're kind of locked into where you're going to be, barring winning the whole thing. But I think the committee's demonstrated over time that they just aren't paying that much attention to what's going on in these tournaments. They look at them to see who's stealing auto bids, and they shift some teams in and out. But I don't think you can help yourself much with winning your conference tournament. I just don't think they value it as much. Even in the Big 12, were to do it, you pretty much would guarantee that you're beating either Houston or Kansas, most likely, maybe Baylor. So another top 15 win. But I just don't think they pay that much attention to it. So I don't believe that much in the validity of giving it your all right before the March Madness really gets in the full swing. Because if you don't need the auto bid, you're just playing extra basketball. And if you're winning the conference tournament, that means you got to go on a hell of a win streak to finish on top and win the national championship, which regardless of anybody scoffing at that idea, is always the goal. Every team in the tournament has the same goal. And the more games you win in a row, the more likely it is you have one where you just don't play that well. So I never loved being in a position where you feel like you've got to win a bunch of these. Fortunately for Tech, they're not. They should win their first game, lock in whatever seed they've got. And then from there on, just play hard, work on yourself, but don't get anybody hurt. And just see how it goes and have some fun in Kansas City. But the immediate question of, like, who would you rather see, BYU or UCF? The answer is obviously UCF. Number one, you played like dog shit in Orlando, and I think you want to get the taste of that game out of your mouth. And number two, I just think BYU is a better basketball team. I'd rather catch a UCF team that might be getting a little hot, because you're going to face a lot of those teams in the tournament. Like, you're going to have to deal with teams that are hot when you get to the tournament, especially considering the seed that Tech is in. You're either going to be playing high majors who fell off towards the end of the year, or much more likely low majors who were surging. So you need to be prepared to deal with teams that have got some momentum and some juice, and you need to be able to counter it and whip up some of your own. So it's good experience there. But I think the larger thing is you lost to a not good UCF team pretty handily, and I'd like that game back. And I think the program would like that game back. I think it'd be big for their confidence to get that game back and really set themselves up for success. Now, we're creeping in towards the end of the show very steadily. So we're going to move now to a little bit bigger picture, which is to talk about the NCAA tournament. The seeds are all up for grabs, as are any number of auto bids that could go to who knows. I think most interestingly, if you're a women's basketball fan, I think it was today, Gonzaga's 24-game win streak was broken by Portland State, a team they had beaten by 50-plus earlier in the year. So to talk about, I mean, obviously men and women is a different ball game, but to talk about some crazy shit that can happen, if it can happen, it will. It's basketball, so who knows what the final bracket will look like. Let's talk about it, Joe, for a minute. In your estimation, based on what you've seen from the various bracketologists, all the folks talking about it, Joe Lunardi, any talking head, where do you think Tech actually ends up? If you had to guess, if you had to put some money on it, what would you think the seed ends up being?
Right now, as I predict, and where I've been firm at, is at a 5. You get BYU beating UCF, even though you, to your point, you would rather see UCF to get that taste out of your mouth. But if you get BYU in that first matchup, most brackets have them at a 5, and I think if you beat BYU, that should flip-flop where you're sitting at in the potential brackets into where they're sitting at. So you get moved up to a 5, and I think if you make it somehow into the South region as at that number 5, I think you're riding pretty high, because that regional's in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we kind of know what goes on in the Metroplex and where the heart of our fan base is at. So if you get that 5 seed in the South region, I think, you know, that's where I'm putting my money at. We have to obviously go out and beat BYU on Thursday morning, as long as they hold serve against Central Florida tomorrow morning. But if that's the case, if you beat BYU, I think you and BYU flip-flop, you get the 5 seed, and then hoping that you get the 5 seed in the South region.
I haven't paid as much attention to your region locks, but as in terms of total seed, I've seen a lot that have floated around 6 and 7. I think 7 would be disrespectfully low, especially if you win game one, especially if it's against BYU. I think that'd be a great data point. And again, I know the committee isn't really looking at that tournament, but I think even they would take notice that you've not taken any real bad losses. I think you have one Q2 loss on the year. So I think that the odds are good that you can lock in comfortably a 6 seed. Can you get to a 5? I don't think so. I think it's a pipe dream to wish for to start moving your seat up this late in the year. Should you be able to? Yes. I think, like, if the committee was fair A win over BYU, maybe one more in the Big 12 tournament, should be a body of work enough. But the fact that you're just now getting back into the AP 25 top 25 conversation, despite finishing fourth and everyone's and the conference everyone's in agreement of is the best conference in the nation outside of the loudmouths from the ACC who are just fucking wrong. But, you know, with that aside, like the fact that you're still not really garnering the respect that you probably earned, I think the committee is like everybody else. They're people. And ultimately, that is going to hold you back. I think in a fair world, you would be right. Beat BYU, maybe win one more. But either way, you should be at a 5 seed and feel good about it. But I just don't think the committee has Tech that high in their estimation. And there's not really much even reason to blink other than the Houston blowout, which was really, really one-sided, and then the Texas loss. You really have played everyone hard, even in losses. So there's no real reason for them to disrespect Tech to the degree they have. But without Warren Washington for so much of the year, I think the committee just has, and a lot of the basketball nation has a sense that like this Tech team's just not maybe for real. But you know, you finish fourth in the Big 12, so fuck them all. You should be a 5 seed. But I think beat BYU, you lock in your 6 seed, and you're fairly happy with it. I mean, the difference between 5 and 6 matters the most in the first round. But it isn't going to be, I think, the difference between what Tech can do as much as where they end up, who ends up being the 1 and 2 seats in their region. And we'll kind of see how that plays out based on how the committee handles, you know, Kansas with the injury to Dickinson, Baylor considering that tough loss at Tech, you know, things like this of that nature with teams that might be competing for the 1, 2, and 3 seeds across the bracket. So that's going to determine more than anything where you end up, I think, in terms of how you can finish.
I also think a lot has to do with how some of these other teams where you're seeing across the board better than you, or at least higher seeds in the brackets through a lot of these different resources, and how they do in their own conference, you know, tournaments. Because I believe Wisconsin is one shade above Texas Tech. San Diego State is one stage, you know, one tier above Texas Tech. And our body of work is better than their body of work if you're putting it side by side, you know, RPI, KenPom, Quad One wins. I think our body of work is still better than both of those. So if either one of those teams also falter in their conference championships, I think that if Tech does ultimately at least win the one, that is going to also push them up again, because that's giving Texas Tech another tier one win.
Yeah, and like you know, some of this is also going to depend on like what does the committee do with some of the low majors like Indiana State, you know, who a lot of people feel like should deservedly be in, but they tend to fall like more on like, you know, the play-in 8 to 10 line than a high major who's struggling who needs to be like 7 or 8 because I don't know, the committee just decided A&M's an 8 seed. Like that'll shape some of this as well. How do you handle the lower seeds? Because that, If the committee does what it's done in the past, high majors that make it in and out large bids more or less have a cap on how low they get dropped, depending where they fall in the bubble, which makes very little sense to me. But hey, you know, I don't build the bracket. So, you know, that's going to determine, right? Because like if you need like a team like, I don't like the example I'm using, because I've started to see some crowing from the Aggies about this, like the potential of like A&M getting an at large bid in the tournament. They can't really be lower than, I think it's a 10 if they're in the play-in. So that's going to shift some people around, because you have to kind of work around that. You can't disrespect somebody by putting them underneath them and so on. So like moments like that, stolen bids can shape a lot of how this kind of middle of the tournament seeding goes. But, you know, I think the committee by and large is going to do what it always does. They're going to screw over a lot of low majors. There's going to be some high majors who have no business being in the tournament there. And I think Tech ends up largely in the middle at a 6 regardless, which brings me to my next question, though. Regardless of seed, 5, 6, or 7, I don't think you fall below that. I don't think there's any possible way you get to a 4. To close the show, without knowing the bracket, let's talk about what you think the hypothetical ceiling is for this tournament team. Where, having seen what we've seen, the limitations, the good, the bad, the ugly, what, if you were calling your shot, how deep do you think they can get in this tournament?
Sweet 16. Confidently, Sweet 16. I think that, just like I said, neutral site games against some of these other ball teams. And it looks like, crossing my fingers, knocking on wood, all of that other stuff, it seems that, like, you know, some of these patterns of shooting the ball inconsistently throughout ball games has diminished over the last three for the most part. I think this is, you could confidently say that, you know, you feel good about where this team is at offensively with just the huge question mark of Warren Washington. But I think firmly right now with the 80% Warren Washington, I say Sweet 16. And after that, you know, all bets are off because it now you're just playing. Now you're playing with a bigger chip on your shoulder because you don't have anything to lose. You weren't expected to be there. So now you have all the momentum on your side of it. And then to the point that I made earlier, if you make it somehow in that South region to Dallas in the Sweet 16, I mean, you could ride the wave of a massive Texas Tech crowd. But as I sit here right now, March 12th, 9:37 p.m. Sweet 16, and you could live with year one in Coach McCaslin's tenure here at Texas Tech, a Sweet 16 run. That just going to be so much for this university moving forward, and that's something I think most Texas Tech fans could live with there.
If you made the Sweet 16 in this season with everything that had gone on, I think anything more than that would be obviously phenomenal, but just getting to that point would be considered just a massive, overwhelming success. The other thing to remember is, like, Tech basketball doesn't have many Sweet 16s under its belt, period. We're not too good of a program to turn our nose up to it. And there's always, when you lose in the tournament, there's always that disappointment that you feel when your run is done. But I truly hope there are not any delusional Tech fans out there who can't look at that and say, this was not just a job well done. This was about as perfect of a job you could expect from the staff in year one with everything going on. Do I think they can get there? I think your ceiling is the Sweet 16. And I would hope to be wrong that they go beyond. And I will comment on that in a second, what could allow them to. But, you know, you play good enough basketball that I feel fairly comfortable you can get past round one, because you're probably going to be a bit underseeded, especially if Warren Washington is playing significant minutes and he's feeling good. I think you're a bit underseeded at a five, at anything less than a five. So you should get an opponent you can beat in round one. And get moving up down the line. The round of 32 will obviously be a lot more of a challenge, but depending who you find next, depending on the bracket breakdown, again, I think you're better than a lot of the competition you'll face this early on in the tournament due to you being underseeded. So you should be able to get to the Sweet 16 if Warren Washington is fully healthy and the team plays like it's capable of. They've beaten teams who are going to be in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and Final Four. And other than the game against Houston, you've looked good enough to beat any team in the nation. Granted, that Houston game had any number of tricks to it, considering how it was called from a refereeing perspective that I won't get into, and just how well Houston played in that one. That was probably the second best game they played of the year, the first being when they just crushed Kansas. But that aside, like, Houston's clearly one of the best teams in the nation, but a lot of the Big 12 falls into that conversation as well as being top 10, top 5 teams. So, you know, you're in a position where I think that is very doable if you play your best basketball. Now, the team hasn't always done this, and you've got to do it for multiple games in a row in order to get it there, obviously. From there on, what will allow this team to succeed is the same thing that allows almost every lower seed team get through to the Elite Eight, Final Four, national title, etc. Luck. I mean, the tournament's luck. It is the worst selection method for, like, the actual best team in basketball. We've all known this for years. It's a terrible way to determine who your best teams are, because it's a crapshoot. There is a reason why nobody's ever gotten close to having a perfect bracket, because it is impossible with any certainty to predict who's going to shoot well on what given night, who's going to match up well with who. There's too many data points, too many variables, and it just boils down to dumb luck a lot of the time. Who stays healthy? Who gets hot? Who's playing confident? Who's had a bad breakup with a girlfriend? You know, what official just has an axe to pick with a coach? You know, like, it all comes down to luck in the tournament once you hit the Sweet 16. Because at that point, pretty much everybody who's at that stage is there because they're good. Now, there have been years in which I think you guys can remember a few years ago where, like, Kansas State went on that run where all the top teams in their side of the bracket got knocked out. So they kind of waltzed their way into the Elite Eight. That isn't normal. Most of the time, if you're in the Sweet 16, you just want to – if you weren't a one seed, you just won two pretty tough matchups and you're ready to rock and roll. And you're looking at a bunch of really good basketball teams who are all going to play each other hard. And it's going to be a fight to the finish, and luck will determine the outcome. It's going to be random. It's going to be chance. You just got to hope you get hot. Is it likely? No. You just didn't look good enough this year to be like, oh, we're an Elite Eight team. Like, no, you just – did you look like one of the eight best teams in the nation? Or, in my opinion, what actually has to be to make the Elite Eight and feel comfortable as like a top 15 team? No, you didn't. You just didn't. Could you be, if you play your best basketball, get the breaks you need, as anybody does in the Elite Eight? Yeah. I mean, anything can happen. This isn't the 2019 team, you know, which looked like a national championship caliber team. But this is a team that has enough of the pieces, shooting, hard defense, all these things that come into play in the NCAA tournament that aren't as prevalent in the year. Like your ability to battle adversity, the whistles tend to get a bit quieter, the officiating tends to allow for tougher playing basketball. It just comes down to luck and your ability to ride these waves. So it should be a fun run, though. Now, Joe, I'm going to give you the last word before I close out this episode, and that is simply, if Texas Tech were not to have a successful NCAA tournament, which I think would everyone would say would be losing in round one, what would you think overall of the McCaslin first-year experience?
A lot of people were saying early on that, you know, if you made the NCAA tournament, that was the top. That was the pyramid. That was the icing on top of the cake. That was, if we could at least make it to the tournament, that would be a successful first year for Coach McCaslin. And now, given the way that sometimes how this basketball team has played, certain opponents being how many games they won in the Big 12, the best conference in the nation, you know, that bar was raised. Now, I don't think that, you know, just depending on exactly who you get and what stage they are, because like you said, everybody's, you know, kind of on a different trajectory when they get into the tournament. Some are higher on the up and some are lower going down. So it just kind of depends on which team you do get and what seeding you get, because in that second game, you may be ultimately facing a top four seed there and, you know, being a very, very difficult matchup for you for whatever reasons, big man, this, that, or the other, just a lot of different things. But I think you making it into the tournament was the bar that everybody had set at the start of the year. Hey, I could live with if we make it to the tournament, or that's where we need to be. And I think, like I said, you know, with some of the expectations and how this team has played, that bar has been raised a little bit. Will it be bad if we lost to a team that, you know, that we should have beat? Yes, all those losses suck. But I think in the big picture of you're looking at Coach McCaslin's body of work for the year, I think you'll be happy with making it to the tournament where we stand right now.
Yeah, it goes without saying that, you know, considering everything that went wrong this year and the expectations coming in, that making the NCAA tournament, getting to participate in what is the most fun sporting event to watch, other than if you're a big soccer fan, the World Cup's a lot of fun too, but not as many of us are big soccer fans in this part of the world. But, you know, all I'll say about it is, like, it is, I did not enjoy last year's tournament anywhere near as much about Tech in it, despite all the shenanigans, the upsets. I went to the national title, which, mind you, was a hell of a lot of fun, despite the fact, other than like one brief glorious moment late about the 8-minute mark, UConn dominated. But like, it's not the same when your team's not participating. As much fun as it is to be a casual observer of the tournament, it's so much more fun when your team has a vested interest in what's going on and you're playing good basketball and you're fighting, because until you're out of that day, until that clock hits all zeros in the second half, you're in the fight for a national title, which is a unique and glorious part of the sport. Would it suck eggs to go down in round one to a team you should beat? Abso-fucking-lutely it would. It would suck so hard I wouldn't even be able to put it into words. Does it discredit the work of the staff? No. And like you said, there are plenty of people at the start of the season who didn't think you'd touch this bar. So to be comfortably there, right, with games left to play before the tournament, is a testament to the staff's ability. So I think everybody just needs to just enjoy this ride for what it is. It's something that is ahead of schedule. It's something that maybe shouldn't have even happened, and really just soak it up, right? Like, we get to participate in this, we get to make our brackets, and we can all do my favorite thing, which I always pick Tech to win the national title no matter what, and just enjoy the ride. Nobody thought this team could make it that far in 2019, which was a fantastic basketball team, much better than the one that is playing this year. So maybe there's more magic to be found, and they can get on a run and start playing like some of those guys and lock in and really just have a good time. I mean, that's all I can say is, don't take for granted being in the tournament, because there are a lot of programs every year who miss, and there are programs who still have not ever gotten to participate. And since Chris Beard came to Lubbock, you've only missed it one season. So, I mean, like, don't get complacent with how hard it is in the Big 12 to consistently make the tournament, would be my advice to people, whatever happens. But hopefully we don't exit for the first weekend, because it's just a lot of fun to get to watch your team play. I mean, I straight up, I remember the 2019 run. I remember debating taking like full days off after the opening round in order to just be like, clear anything I've got going on out and sit all day and just wait for the game, watch the game and go. And like the fun of that is different. Like, for instance, this year, my brothers and I are going to go to a bar and watch the opening weekend on Friday. So, you know, like getting to participate in that and potentially watching Tech playing that on that day is just a really special thing. So just enjoy it for what it's worth. We overachieved despite all the bullshit. They got to where they want to be, where they have a shot for the national title. And that is the great thing about this sport, is you do truly have a shot at the national title. Now, that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. Our buddy Kendall has been talking about doing an instant reaction of some sort, article or podcast following the game Thursday. If he's able to do that, keep an eye out for that, as well as any other baseball content we might add. My last note is a tip of the cap to the seniors from the women's side who are exiting the program. Tough year. I'm not going to comment any further on some of the issues in that program. I think it's still a little fresh for everybody. We'll have that conversation probably down the line. But, you know, tough year for them, but congratulations to all the efforts that the folks exiting the program put in. It just didn't work out this season. I'll kind of just leave it at that. But hopefully the men's team can have a much better outcome and finish strong and through the Big 12 tournament and into the NCAA tournament. We'll, of course, have episodes to preview the actual matchup in the NCAA tournament, talking about the results, talking about the bracket, all that jazz following the completion of the Big 12 tournament. So keep your eyes peeled for that as well. Recom, everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the game Thursday. Enjoy March Madness.